You're listening to the best of the Roto Experts in the Morning.
If you have any suggestions, I had some people giving me suggestions as well, Scotty, on Fantasy Freestyle with the Stats Overbeat Cypher yesterday on the Fantasy Sports Network. So let me bounce some off of you, okay? Let me bounce some off of you and see what you like, all right? See if any of them you like. First one I want to talk about, our guy John Beardsley over here. He's got a little pun with Aaron Rodgers, and he goes, Err on the side of caution. What do you think about that one? Err on the side of caution from John Beardsley.
Doesn't make the cut.
What do you think about Alvin and the Chipmunks? Chip in quotation marks, like winning a championship. Alvin and the Chipmunks from Derek Davis.
Not bad, but doesn't, you know, pit it. No.
Not bad, but doesn't make the cut. And right now, remember, Scotty, I think your bottom one, it looks like you're adjusting it a little bit right now, but at the bottom end of you, you know, we got things like make this house Mahomes, Henne a la vodka. So that's what we're trying to beat in your top five, at least, all right? What about, we got two with, you know, Saints running back Alvin Kamara to bounce off you. The first one is Derek Davis. He hit me up on Twitter yesterday. Big shout out to him. He's part of the Stats Overbeat Cypher. And, you know the great video game, right, with Mario and Luigi. What about the Kamario brothers?
I like that.
The Kamario brothers, like the Mario brothers?
Yeah, I like that.
You like that? Do you like it more than Make This House Mahomes?
No. What's the guy's name again?
Derek Davis on Twitter.
Derek Davis. This is my new number five.
Yeah, okay. You're in the spreadsheet now, so I'm assuming that you're going to move it around. Derek Davis, big shout-out, the Kamario brothers. And then also we got another one involving Alvin Kamara that I see you put in. I don't know, Scotty, though, because this one, I don't think, like in most formats, you're allowed to have this many characters in your team name. I think this is longer than you could ever fit in a team name, but taking Kamara on a Sunday drive, it's like taking the car out.
Yeah, it's cute, but it's trying a little too hard. It's not quite as long as John Georgopoulos, you know, Fantasy Sharks, but it's long. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're going to do that, I like the Kamario brothers for Kamara better, or even Alvin and the Chipmunks, you know, for Alvin Kamara. A lot of options with Kamara. The last one I want to bounce off of you, Scott, this is actually my new number one. I really love it. We're talking about Leonard Fournette. What about for Netflix and chill? Obviously off the term Netflix and chill.
I like that a lot.
I like that a lot as well. Jim
How much
Martell,
do I like it? How much do I like it? It's probably my new number five, and Kamario Brothers gets bumped out.
Ah, the Kamario Brothers has a very short stay in Scott Engel's
Who is that from?
A guy named Jim Martell. Jim Martell, one of my followers on Twitter, hits me up a lot. He direct messaged me this right after Fantasy Freestyle.
Yeah. So my top five right now is my Ingram toenail hurts. Well, actually, my Ingram toenail hurts is going to move to number three. Jimmy G spots my new number one. Sometimes I change my mind on these. Then Henny a la vodka, Make This House Mahomes, and for Netflix and chill.
Okay, that's a very strong top.
But
five.
I have one that like I think may be my new number one. If you haven't heard it yet,
no, I haven't. What is it?
Okay, from Taylor Bryson, Stairway to Evans is not
Stairway
the one that
to
hit.
Evans.
I think my new one, number one from Taylor Bryson, who's now going to have two in my top three, is Carry On My Wayward Son.
Like Carry On Johnson?
I just wanted to play this in case you didn't know what classic rock song this was based off of, Dane.
I couldn't name it for you, but I've heard it before.
Yeah.
Is it Kiss? I'm going to go guess it's Kiss.
No, it's Kansas.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Who was that? Stairway to Evans and Carry On My Wayward Son. Who was that that submitted those?
Taylor Bryson. I'm moving my Ingram toenail hurts, his other one, to my new number three. And Carry On My Wayward Son is my new number one.
Yeah, and, they know how to play to the base right there. Taylor Bryson knows how to impress the king, Scott Angle. Taylor Bryson coming through with him, right? Had My Ingram Toenail Hurts, Stairway to Heavens, and Carry On My Wayward Son. I think he's really got the feel of this. We're going to have to figure this out. Remember, though, we got a full month, okay? Scotty, what I think we should do on this is, you know, as we head into the Labor Day weekend, maybe, we'll figure out the poll. Right? The best four for the poll, right? And then we could have it up all Labor Day weekend. This way, when we come back on that Tuesday, which will be the beginning of week one of the regular season, we'll be able to announce it, to be able to give someone a package. And I know you've also graciously offered that you will help set their lineup 1 week of the fantasy football season, correct?
Yes. For Netflix and chill, I liked, but it was tough to kick it out of my top five, but it's just not everybody can make it.
That's all right. Fair enough. I have four Netflix and chill still in there. That's why we have a lot of sources, okay? We're also going to let the guys down in the pit of misery dilly-dilly to them. The producers are guys like Chris Bavona down there, JP the Night Owl. We'll let them have some nominations as well, which ones they like the best. Eventually, going into the Labor Day weekend, we'll put them all in a poll, and then we put it over the holiday weekend. We'll put it as a poll for like 3 days, so we have a real chance for people to say what they think is their best. And then that's how we'll declare the winner. That's how we'll declare the winner of the
our
contest.
Our two, three, and four are all the same. Our five is different, but you know, you're being biased because like your number five has a jet in there, you know, Bilal Wright. So
we'll see. There's a lot of time for people to get bumped. I think Bilal Wright will get bumped eventually, but we shall see. We say it all the time in golf, that cash is just the same as any others. And Colin, if people were listening to you and following you last week, they would have got a little bit of cash, huh? How'd you do last week?
Yeah, it was a pretty big week last week. I ended up winning one of the $5 tournaments on DraftKings for $25,000. Had another lineup come in third place in that tournament. So really big week. Had a lot of Dustin Johnson. I know we talked about him as one of the dominant favorites at the RBC Canadian Open. And like you said, it's still, you know, good old U.S. dollars back in the bank.
That's right.
At the Canadian Open.
That's right. They don't pay out in pesos just because it is golf. Listen, let's move forward, though, Colin. Like, we got the Bridgestone Invitational. Listen, I want to ask you something. Tiger Woods has won this tournament already, what, something like 8 times, going for his 9th win in this tournament. And I watched him at the British Open. He was at the top of the leaderboard on the back nine on a Sunday. Is Tiger Woods back, Colin?
He's definitely back, at least as far as being one of the elite players in the world. He's not back as far as being the world number one. That definitely still belongs to Dustin Johnson, but he's going to be a guy that you have to keep your eyes on. He's going to be very popular this week because of his track record at this event. It's also the home of the last victory that he's had on tour in 2013. So Tiger should be pretty popular. One of the things I'm curious about is at the Open Championship, you're able to hit iron off the tee a lot. And I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that this week. 7,400-yard par 70 course. And it played as the fourth longest course in par adjusted distance on the tour. So you're going to have to be driving the ball well, whether it's with a long iron or a three wood. Curious to see if Tiger will be able to do that. He definitely used to be able to do that back in the day, and that's why he did so well here. But it'll be a fun tournament to watch.
It's also a tournament that doesn't have a cut line. So how does that change your strategy, whether it's cash or tournament and going? Like, do you do anything differently?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of times when we talk about, you know, ownership, and we talk about maybe fading higher owned players depending on their price tag. One of the benefits you're hoping to get from that is that the guy misses the cut and he wipes out all those lineups. And so that can happen even to the best players in the world. They have a couple bad rounds. Maybe they were going to bounce back on the weekend, but they're not around to play. So you don't get that benefit as far as fading some of the chalky players. You don't get any missed cuts. So it kind of wipes out one of the benefits of going a little bit more contrarian. So that's one angle I like to think about a little bit more in a no-cut event. And then the other thing is just the scoring environment. In this week particularly, there aren't a lot of eagles to be had. So the fantasy scoring is a little bit lower than normal. And the difference between the third place finisher and the 10th place finisher was the same last year as the difference between the 10th place finisher and the 50th place finisher. So you really need to do whatever you can to find golfers who are going to finish inside the top five, the top 10. And if that means you take a lesser golfer down below, that's okay, because he's really not going to be separated that much in scoring. Whereas, you know, for the most part, if it's a cut event and a guy misses a cut, you know, he's going to finish way behind in DraftKings.
Fair enough. We're talking with Colin Drew over here representing DailyRoto.com. They make millionaires over there. Colin Drew became a thousandaire himself just last week. Here's what I want to ask you. You talk about these par fives. I mean, they got only one that's pretty much reachable, right? I see that one of these is the 16th hole is a 667-yard hole, which is absolutely ridiculous. Only a couple of par fives. So does that mean we're talking about, like, people with their, you know, with their short iron game? Is it strokes gained approach? What are we looking at because of the fact that this doesn't have many par fives and is a different kind of course?
Yeah, it's definitely not a course that profiles for any specific type of golfer. It is so long that you do still need to be driving the ball in the fairway with adequate distance off the tee. Strokes gained approach is always kind of the number one statistic that if you look at any given leaderboard, you're seeing the golfers who finish inside the top five have elite strokes gained approach metrics for that year. And so I think that's kind of the way that you're going. But in this field, especially at the top end, like all these guys can compete on a given basis. And so a lot of the times you're kind of just ciphering through the different price tags and as well as the ownership of the different golfers to figure it out. One of the guys at the top besides Dustin Johnson that we really like this week is Justin Rose. 59% odds to T20 in the daily golf probability is available at Daily Roto and is our second rated golfer in the field. I think he's going to be about half the ownership of Tiger Woods. And so we like Justin Rose as a pivot off of Tiger Woods, despite his track record at this event.
Well, let's go back to Dustin Johnson, though, really quick, because we saw last week, and obviously there's a big reason behind your win. And I remember last year, too, is we possibly in that stretch where it's almost like you have to start with Dustin Johnson and just build around him?
I certainly think you if you're building multiple teams, you want exposure to Dustin Johnson. And his price is high enough that I don't think his ownership is going to be out of control. One of the trends we've seen this year is that people have been hesitant to pay for golfers off of a win because they don't expect them to go back-to-back. But, right. You know, Dustin Johnson is still the favorite in this event. So I think that building tournament lineups around him is definitely the way to go. For cash games, you could pay up for Dustin Johnson. You could go down to someone like Justin Rose.
All right, fair enough. Hey, Colin, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, and I know next week we're going to have you on for a little bit longer because it is the final major of the year, right? We got the PGA Championship next week.
Yeah, PGA Championship next week, and then football season right around the corner. A lot of great stuff going on at Daily Roto for that as well. The tech team's built one of the best optimizers in the industry, and I'm really excited to see what the NFL product looks like this year. Obviously have all the content from Drew Dinkmeyer, Mike Leone, and plenty in store for NFL, but the golf's last major, so we'll do it right next week.
All right, sounds good, Colin. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us. As always, avoid the native area, and we're going to talk about the major next week, where maybe there's some more fish in the pond for us to attack and win thousands like you.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
All right, thanks a lot, Colin. Representing DailyRoto.com, where they make millionaires over there. Colin Drew cashing big time. But we also have our guy Mike Leone on the line representing DailyRoto.com where they make millionaires. Hey, Mike, I don't know how you feel, but I am excited. There is football tonight. Are you excited? Do you see like presents underneath your Christmas tree this morning?
I'm excited, but I'm also a little nervous, like, oh man, we gotta get going here, get everything ready for opening day. It's time to get serious. Tech team is doing a great job with our optimizer this year. I've got a good look at our beta so far. It's going to be amazing. But I am excited, but also, like I said, it's really time to get going on the DFS side of things, and we're doing that as we speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me start off with this, and because listen, there's football tonight, so there's DFS football as well. You know, me and Scott were just talking about the Baltimore Ravens and how there are things to look for in the preseason. You know, all three of their top three wide receivers are all new. They drafted wide receivers as well. They drafted not one but two tight ends. So for a team like this, where so many of their skill position players are new to the team, you know, how do you play something like that in DFS where you really have no idea how many series these guys are going to get, what kind of chemistry these guys have, what the coaching staff wants to see in these guys, to what extent Lamar Jackson is going to be on the field tonight? I mean, how do you read, especially a team like the Ravens, who have so many new skill position pieces?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And the key to preseason DFS, honestly, it's just all about playing time, like figuring
snaps.
Out who's going to see the field. And, yeah, snaps, exactly. Whereas, like, in regular season DFS, obviously the snaps are important, but you can dig a bit deeper, like, into the efficiency for snaps and whatnot. It's hard to do any of that in preseason DFS. All you care about is, you know, who's going to see the field, who's going to see it for an extended period of the time. And, you know, sometimes these teams where there are, you know, a new influx of players and they do need to see a bit more, it can actually be beneficial because they're going to see more snaps just because the team needs to figure it out themselves.
You're taking a look at the fact, you know, there's one game tonight and, you know, it's kind of hard to spread the field out. You know, that's one thing to consider. But overall, how do you attack preseason football? You know, we were talking about it yesterday. Sure, you know, second and third stringers are going to get opportunities. But as I always say, opportunities don't always lead to production necessarily. And, you know, you don't know how these guys are going to execute given the playing time.
No, you don't. But as I said, like, that's sort of a layer that's really difficult to project in preseason DFS is that production, because you don't really know, you know, the strength of the opposing defenses, like the DVP calculations that we're generally doing during the season. Oh, this team soft versus tight end. You know, that goes out the window because the opposing defenses aren't playing who they're normally going to play either. We don't know how they're going to execute. So it really just comes down to researching playing time and trying to follow the beat writers and just get a sense for, you know, who's going to see the field for the majority of the time. And especially in that first week of preseason where you've not seen the start, you know, the regular season starters play that much, people are going to be tempted to still use the popular names that they're used to using in regular season NFL DFS. But that's honestly, like, usually not the way to go about things until you get to, like, week three where they really start to see the starters play a legitimate half of football.
Yeah, you gotta, I think you gotta be clued into some of the beat writers because they have, you know, the good idea on who's gonna be playing, you know, the entire second and entire third quarter. And that's where you get your kind of read on snaps and stuff like that, as you mentioned, especially in the first weeks of preseason. You know, these starters, the names, you know, they're playing a series or two. You know, they're playing maybe the first quarter and then they're getting out of there. So you really gotta keep it locked to some of the beat writers in terms of, you know, who is going to get those snaps, which, you know, does lead to production if the skill set is there, to Scott's point. The other piece of preseason that I think is an interesting layer, Mike, and I want to hear how you kind of respond to this, is the over-under on these games are usually far lower than regular season games. I look tonight, the over-under on this game is 33.5 as I look over to mybookie.ag. When games in general have such low point totals, what does that mean for DFS? Does that mean you target any positions differently? Do you think about maybe more running games in this way? What do you do when you see a really low total? And those are really like the only options on the slate. It's not like you also have Green Bay versus New Orleans on the slate to also attack. What do you do with such low totals?
It's really ugly, the totals that you're seeing for preseason NFL DFS. And it's basically a pick 'em the way they have the salaries done, just because – you know, there's no need to price, you know, Aaron Rodgers at 10K because you probably shouldn't even be using him at the pick'em price that he's at because of the amount of playing time he's going to see. So as far as, like, if you're targeting running back over receiver, that type of thing, it doesn't really matter because it's like a pick'em slate. So the way it affects things, I hate to be repetitive, but it just comes back to the playing time again, whereas on a traditional slate, we might favor some other players that might not see as many snaps but have high touchdown equity, guys like, you know, goal line backs and things like that. Whereas on this slate, you're not looking for those types of players. You're not really worried so much about the scoring upside as, you know, who's going to see the amount of targets, who's going to get the amount of carries. So volume is always a big deal in NFL DFS. It's always our number one driver. I just think that gets, you know, exponentially more important for preseason DFS, one, because of the low scoring that you mentioned, and two, just because it's harder to figure it out. So it's a much bigger edge over the field than it normally would be.
Well, I'm looking at the quarterbacks for tonight on DraftKings, and at 11,400, Lamar Jackson is the fifth most is actually the cheapest quarterback. I feel like he's going to be 100% owned. I feel like I can't go with Trubisky because I don't know how much he's going to play at 11,400. And Chase Daniel is, you know, from what I've seen of him preseason at 11,400, has been mediocre. You know, maybe Tyler Bray is the answer. You know, how are you handicapping the field if you want to go against Lamar Jackson tonight?
Yeah, so the difficulty, and again, like, everyone's the same price tag just because of, in preseason, the way they do it, even on a showdown slate like we've got. And DraftKings has their new showdown slate where you've got a captain spot. So one way to differentiate from the field is just mess around, like who you're throwing in that captain spot where you're going to get a multiplier of your points there. But as far as handicapping the field there, yeah, it's pretty difficult. I think, you know, you want to get off Lamar Jackson in tournaments to a certain extent. I guess Tyler Bray would be the best guy to use. Whoever you think is going to get the most snaps for Chicago behind Trubisky is really where you're looking there.
Fair enough. We're talking with my man Mike Leone out of DailyRoto.com. They make millionaires over there. You got to make sure you check out Daily Roto, all the insight they give you for Daily Fantasy. And listen, Daily Fantasy is starting in football tonight. And also, don't forget, we still got that partnership going on with DKMS. You could still win tickets for two to the 2018 Fall Classic over there, our collaboration with Daily Roto and, of course, DKMS. Hey, Mike. We got a poll question up today that I would love your impact, your insights on. We talk about these rookie running backs. We talk about these rookie quarterbacks all the time. We're asking folks today, which rookie wide receiver do you think has the biggest fantasy football impact? And we're talking about in redraft leagues, like for this year, because rookie wide receivers don't usually pop off. But, you know, our choices right now, we have a tie right now in the poll. You know, we have Calvin Ridley at 31%, DJ Moore at 31%, Anthony Miller getting 23% of the vote, Christian Kirk getting 15% of the vote, and then we got write-in votes with people like Michael Gallup, James Washington in Pittsburgh. Handicap this field of rookie wide receivers for me. Who are you taking in a redraft league in some kind of rookie formats? How do you think it shakes out this year?
So I definitely prefer DJ Moore to Calvin Ridley for a couple of reasons. One, I think he's just a better wide receiver prospect. He had a breakout age in the 97th percentile, or the 98th percentile, according to playerprofiler.com. A really high college dominator rating. His workout metrics are really good. You know, he ran a 4.42 in the 40s. He's got a 123.8 spark X score, which is a 92nd percentile. So just a combination of breaking out at a young age, good college production, good college volume, and a really good athleticism. I think he's the guy to use, whereas Ridley, he broke out at a much higher age, which is a little bit of a red flag for a guy that's getting drafted that early. And, of course, you're competing with Julio Jones for targets there, and I just don't see the route to volume as much. But Anthony Miller is a slot receiver, and a Bears offense is going to be so much better, is very intriguing as well. But Moore is my answer. I like the write-in votes that you mentioned. Gallup is intriguing just because of the potential for targets there in Dallas. Right. Could be much higher than anyone else is going to see.
You have an article, Mike, in the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package on rotoexperts.com. Enter the king at checkout for a special discount. And you talk about zero running back and zero wide receiver theories. I'm a big fan of Tariq Cohen this year. I think in that run-pass offense that Chicago is going to deploy, that he's going to be a big playmaker. So maybe sometimes boom or bust and a good best ball option. And in our FNTSY draft, Emory Hunt actually took him as RB1, which I think is a little much. But I love the upside of Tariq Cohen this year. John Fox is not there, and I think, you know, Matt Nagy will realize what he has in him. If you're going to play zero wide receiver theory, how much do you like Tariq Cohen?
Yeah, and then zero running back, I think guys like him make a lot of sense, where you've got that floor because of their involvement in the receiving game, where that floor matters a bit more to you in a PPR format than it might somebody else who, you know, as their, you know, fourth, fifth running back, you know, they don't care about the four catches for 30 yards or whatever they're going to get as a floor on a weekly basis. But you do. It does matter to you. And that's what I wrote about in the Exclusive Edge package, is part of why zero running back strategy can work is because you're getting players that are more valuable to you just based on your needs and your allocations than they are for anybody else. And someone like Cohen is a good example of that, where you're getting that floor because of the work in the pass catching role. But we saw his explosiveness, especially at the beginning of last year. And you do have a hint of upside there, especially if something were to happen to Jordan Howard. But the nice thing too, as you mentioned, no more John Fox and that boring, you know, sort of, you know, run first old school type offense. You got a guy, Matt Nagy, that's going to move Tariq Cohen around, that's going to use him more consistently. His usage last year was disappointing after a really strong start to the year. It didn't seem like they knew how to use him. So I'm with you. I like Tariq Cohen quite a bit as a guy to target if you're doing a zero running back approach.
Hey, Mike, let's stay with the Bears and zoom out a little bit. You know, I mean, listen, we talk about you like Tariq Cohen. People like the volume potentially of Jordan Howard. You know, they bring in Allen Robinson as a number one wide receiver. They sign Gabriel to potentially be this over-the-top guy. You think about the buzz of Anthony Miller as a rookie making plays already in camp. They spend money as well on Trey Burton. A lot of people are excited about the role he can play in this Nagy offense, approximating, you know, kind of the size, speed, weapon that Travis Kelce is. Seems like there's a lot of names on the Bears. All of a sudden, there's a lot of mouths to feed. So my question for you, Mike, is like, in preseason, what are you looking for? What are going to be some of the indicators that you're looking for in preseason to kind of give you clues as to what this offense is going to look like? Because, you know, a lot of new pieces in Chicago. You know, what might you be able to take away from what you do see when the ones are on the field in preseason for the Bears?
Yeah, so the two spots I'm most interested in seeing, I think running back, we've got a pretty good idea there. Jordan Howard is the main guy. Cohen is the guy to move all over the field and use in the pass-catching game. You know, feel pretty good about Allen Robinson as the sort of target hog on this team. It's, you know, is Anthony Miller going to lock down this starting slot
right.
receiver role? That's number one. Number two, I am interested in seeing – you know, how they worked in Trey Burton, who's a really athletic tight end and had some success in Philly as the backup there when he had to fill in at times, and obviously through the touchdown in the Super Bowl, which was awesome. So those are the two spots I think I'm looking at most, that slot wide receiver spot, the tight end spot for Burton, seeing how they're able to utilize those two spots to try and give me a better idea of where are the secondary targets going to go. I think we've got the primary stuff pretty figured out, barring injury. But, you know, how much of an impact are these secondary pieces to the offense going to have?
When you're looking at the Bears offense, you know, there's a lot of new pieces. We talk about this a lot on the show. You know, as good as a team looks on paper, especially when you're talking about, like, teams like the 49ers and the Bears, if there's a lot of new personnel with each other, like there are these two teams, it's got to take time to gel. And you might have to be patient with a guy like, you know, Burton, Allen Robinson, Trubisky, Anthony Miller have all never played with each other before.
Yeah, there are some chemistry issues. I try not to get into that too much just because it's a little bit going down narrative street where, you know, maybe it matters, maybe it doesn't matter. You know, we saw with the Rams offense, they got a new coach. They got some new personnel in at wide receiver last year. And, you know, there was no adjustment period for them. They went from, you know, they had Jared Goff went from last in the league in yards per attempt to first in the league yards per attempt. I think that was the jump. If it wasn't quite that, it was something very close to that, something really extreme. So could you second guess things? Yeah. But ultimately, I think it's going to be an offense on the rise. You start to see the talent. You've got the coaching switch to see that's going to be favorable. It's very difficult to see how they regress and take a step backwards from last year. So as Dana and I said, yeah, maybe you want to watch some of those roles, but I'm not concerned that this offense is just a complete dud out of the gate. I don't think you can project it as such. You'd be sacrificing too much value. And Trubisky is, you know, a quarterback that I'm looking to target as someone that is always doing late round quarterback, almost regardless of format. Looking right now at like Fantasy Football Calculator, and they have him as like the 24th quarterback off the board, which is pretty crazy. And I think in, you know, more like expert type leagues and less casual leagues, he's going much earlier. But if you're getting him even in the low teens in terms of quarterback off the board, he's an excellent late-round quarterback target. In addition to the new offense, the weapons he has, he is someone who has some, you know, rushing upside, which is a big deal, which helps the floor-ceiling combination for quarterbacks.
Fair enough. Hey, Mike, listen, I know that you you played with Bo Jackson in Tecmo Super Bowl, so you're comfortable being a two-sport athlete. We talked about how I was more of a Christian Okoye kind of guy in that game. But listen, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you one question here about DFS baseball. Because, listen, we had the trading deadline, right? And so we had a number of people moving to new teams. And I think this could be interesting. When I see guys like Brian Dozier in L.A., right, a different lineup, when I see Leonis Martin maybe in that Cleveland lineup, you know, I think there could be some value there of them being able to produce a little bit more in new lineups. I also see, like, Archer all of a sudden moving to the National League in Pittsburgh. You know, can you tell me of these guys who have kind of new teams this week, where might there be some, you know, inefficiency? Where might there be some value or opportunity because of the new team or the new situation that they're in? You know, the trading deadline has now come and gone in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it last night with Cole Hamels, a guy that we were on way above the market, where not only is he getting a positive league shift going from the American League to the National League, doesn't have to deal with the DH competition, certainly not quite as high on the offensive side of the ball. But he's also getting this massive park shift, you know, going from pitching in Texas to he was pitching in PNC Park last night. His home field, of course, is going to be in Wrigley. So I think a guy like that gets a really big boost in value. And you mentioned some of the hitters like Brian Dozier going to the Dodgers. What interests me sometimes is the teams that sent those players are going to have to, you know, redo their lineups. And as a result, guys are going to be shifted up in the order into spots they generally aren't in. And at least for a couple weeks, the pricing might be a bit behind on that. And you could get guys that, you know, maybe they're not highly talented. Maybe the offenses around them aren't great. That's why they were selling to begin with. But because of the lineup spot attached to them, the pricing isn't reflecting that. And similarly with the bullpen trades, too, something that goes underlooked a lot in MLB DFS is the strength of bullpens. You know, the Mariners boasted their bullpen, so they're going to be a tougher team to stack against, whereas some of the teams that sent these relievers and have these horrific bullpens are going to be even that much more fun and create that much more upside for opposing stacks.
What about pitchers moving from the American League to the National League? We've seen it be very advantageous in the past, and right when the moment is fresh, maybe you should take advantage of it. You have, you know, these guys haven't seen Chris Archer as much. There's no DH, and Kevin Gausman's first start of the for the Braves is going to come against the Mets this weekend.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, a sight that I think he's going to be happy to see after facing the Yankees and the Red Sox and not having to deal with that. And it's something that at Daily Roto, you know, we're accounting for in our baseline adjustments because you're going to expect a lower weighted on base average allowed for these starting pitchers pitching the National League versus the American League. You also get that pitcher spot to face. You know, that's a really good, it's a little thing, but that's increasing the strikeout potential quite a bit for these starting pitchers when you face a pitcher spot, you know, two or three times to start rather than a DH spot two or three times. So as I mentioned with Cole Hamels, it is definitely a big positive. You've got to look at each case on its own, whereas like Chris Archer was already in a pretty good ballpark, so he'll get a boost, but like I said, he's not going to get the same boost as Hamels, who's going off, you know, he's not going to get the same boost as Kevin Gausman, who are going from these hitters' parks.
There you have it. Talking with Mike Leone here at DailyRoto.com. Remember, okay, their partnership with DKMS helping the fight against blood cancer. You could still potentially win tickets to the 2018 World Series. And listen, DFS football starts today, so you definitely have to check them out. All the great content of Mike Leone and DailyRoto.com. Hey, Mike, thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us. We'll talk to you a little bit more next week, but we got a big old week one preseason slate to break down, all right? Have a good one, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
So, Jake, it's Hall of Fame weekend. We have the Hall of Famers going in. A really good class. Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher. I'm happy for Brian Dawkins, Jerry Kramer, Robert Brazil, Bobby Bethard, who was a longtime NFL executive. And for whatever reason, he's attached to Ryan Leaf in that way. He's just he is like it was the end of his GM career is attached to Ryan Leaf. It was unfortunate, but he built some of those great Washington teams of the 80s. But the guy that, for better or for worse, and this is his MO, is garnering the attention is Terrell Owens for not being there. And I thought Tony Dungy made a really salient point last night. And I sort of feel the same way. It's self-inflicted, so you don't have to cry in your pillow for T.O., but I feel bad that he's making this decision because, as Tony Dungy said, it was a great weekend for him. His family came, his high school teammates, his old coaches, his college teammates, they all got together, had this big party, and you don't need to feel snubbed when you're already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I originally thought this was going to work out. And I was obviously completely wrong. When this first happened, said T.O.'s doing his thing, and I understand. Like the fact is T.O. should have been first ballot. There's no question about that. He's one of the three best receivers of all time. But, you know, you could also make the counter-argument that the wide receiver position is the deepest to try to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, look how long it took somebody like Tim Brown. And you can have a debate of whether or not you really think Tim Brown deserves it. But it's just the point being is that the wide receiver position is loaded. It has been for a long time of trying to get into the Hall of Fame. And that's probably never going to stop with how the NFL has changed. But at the same time, you know, if you want to fear scorn and you kind of want to make your point, you know, I understood being frustrated with it. I thought he was going to do that, and then, you know, things would just kind of cool off, and then he would show up anyway. But now, you know, we saw the NFL push back. It was like, why? We don't want you here anyway. And I was like, really, NFL? Like, did you really have to go and do that and make it worse? It just kind of felt like who can get the last word in. And now T.O., as you said, he's doing his own thing on a separate location. And it's like, you know, it just kind of feels like people who are friends who got in a fight that are just being petty about it at this point.
Agreed. I think that's a really good way to describe the dynamic. And I could appreciate David Baker, who I think runs the Hall of Fame. He has said T.O. is welcome up until the very last minute. So if T.O. said tomorrow morning, you know what? I got to get there. I need to get my gold jacket there. And went there, he'd be welcome. And I appreciate that the Hall of Fame took that stance. You're right. NFL shouldn't have anything to do with it. They should just say, we welcome T.O. anytime he wants. We're sad that he's chosen not to be there. He's welcome anytime, any place, anywhere.
But here's the intricate question. If you're out there in Ohio and you can only choose to go to one or the other, are you going to go see T.O. or are you going to go see the main Hall of Fame event?
I would see the main event.
See? Really? See, the fact that you hesitated, I think there's a lot of people that would probably go just to go hear T.O.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. He's not my favorite guy. You know, I'm feeling bad for him in some ways only because, like, two days after the event, I think he'd be like, yeah, I probably should have gone. Or at some point in his life, I think he's going to be like,
he's going to regret it. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. It's unfortunate.
I'm with you on that.
Like, I've read a lot of stuff about T.O., and, like, he had a really tough upbringing and a really tough life, and I think he's got, and I'm not a psychologist in any way, but I think he's got some deep-seated emotional stuff that's always driven him and also created the turmoil in his life, personally and professionally. And I just think I wish he would get past it. And, like, it's not like the guys that are on the panel would love him to be there. Ray Lewis and Randy Moss and Urlacher and Dawkins, they would love him to be there. So it's just
100%.
Unfortunate. You know, it's a really good class, and he's not going to be there in person.
Green Bay really interests me, okay, because as we talk about the size of the pie, you know, in Green Bay, it's one of the biggest pies out there. Hey, by the way, Jake, when we talk pie, are we talking pizza pie or dessert pies?
Whatever you feel like, whatever you're hungry for
today.
Okay.
All right, cool. Well, it's breakfast time, right? So maybe we're talking about, because I was like, hey, it's the biggest pie and I didn't know whether to say at the pizza shop or at the bakery. We're going to go bakery because it's early here on Roto Experts in the morning, right? So this Green Bay has one of the biggest pies out there. I am intrigued, Jake, by Ty Montgomery. Ty Montgomery, who's running as like this third down PPR back, and if we believe, you know, because when he was at that wide receiver, when he made that shift over to running back, he didn't really have as much time with Aaron Rodgers, right? Before Aaron Rodgers got hurt, before Ty Montgomery got hurt. If he's now going to be kind of definitive as this PPR kind of back, Jake, tell me why he can't do just what Theo Riddick and Chris Thompson and Duke Johnson do. If the Green Bay pie is bigger, I know there's a lot of other options and stuff, but why isn't Ty Montgomery in the same conversation, you know, with these other big-time PPR backs like Riddick and Thompson, Duke Johnson, and the like? Couldn't he do just the same exact thing in Green Bay?
Not unless Aaron Jones has no value when he comes back. That's the problem. Aaron Jones is back in week three, and that Ty Montgomery's not playing in front of Aaron Jones.
So you think Aaron Jones is the pass catching back there?
Yeah, no question.
Oh, okay. See, I thought it was more, and thank you for, you know, clarifying for me. I thought it was more Jake. I thought Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams more like in Cleveland, how you had two guys who would more be in that kind of early down, allowing Duke to still be that third down kind of role. And so I thought Ty would still be that third down kind of role, and it's Williams and Jones fighting for that other kind of work. But Jones is the PPR kind of guy, you're saying?
No, Jones can do everything. Jones is more explosive. Jamal Williams is the better all-around running back, but Jones is definitely more explosive. And if they were trying to use Jones potentially as their number one, he was going to take plenty of the passing work. It wasn't going to be Ty Montgomery still going to get 6 to 8 touches. And that is the best-case scenario. Even the first 2 weeks, it's going to be 6 to 8, as you said, for like the Theo Riddick role, and that's not something you really trust these days anyway. Maybe in a PPR is your third running back, but it's not somebody I'm going to go after there and target just because of some training camp news. So, yeah, it just comes down to, no, I don't have very much interest in Ty Montgomery, because it really, for me to have interest or value, one of the three running backs needs to go away.
Okay, it needs to be a timeshare, not a committee, because then we're exactly slicing it up a little too much. All right, fair enough. I thank you for the clarification. Honestly, I thought that he was like, I had Aaron Jones wrong. I had Aaron Jones pegged as like, you know, fighting with Williams for that other part of the role, you know, similar to how like Hyde and Chubb in Cleveland, similar to how there's like Kerryon Johnson and LGBT rights in Detroit, and then you have the other side of Theo Riddick. But you're telling me that Aaron Jones kind of is more of a more of a Swiss Army knife than can do it all, and that would then compromise even whatever share of Ty Montgomery has in that pass catching role, despite the fact that the Packers pie is pretty big and pretty tasty. Okay, I go to Miami, and both of us do not think necessarily that the Dolphins are going to be contenders. We both like that under. Remember, we even told Kenny in Philly that was one of my top three unders, you know, along with the Bucs and the Raiders for this season. Head coach Adam Gase, you know, interesting day. He was talking, and he admits that he's really trying to find a role for their free agent signee from Kansas City, Albert Wilson. Scott, they sign Albert Wilson in the offseason to a 3-year, $24 million deal. So that's like legit money, $8 million a year to sign a wide receiver. But I look at this wide receiver room, okay? You got Kenny Stills. They signed Danny Amendola, whose mom makes the best meatballs. Hey, they got Albert Wilson, and everyone's expecting a big step from this kid, Devontae Parker, right? But then later on in the day, I saw more news that Devontae Parker is not having a good camp. That cornerback Xavier Rhodes was kind of owning him. I saw one report that was saying literally, no, Xavier Rhodes is not part of Devontae Parker's equipment, but it looks like it because he's just wearing it all the time. And so talk to me about this Dolphins wide receiver room. So many people expect Devontae Parker to take a step forward. I'm kind of on the side now, Scott, that maybe Parker is just fugazi, and you got to look at guys like Stills, Amendola, and Albert Wilson, actual NFL professional wide receivers who we've seen do it before, and kind of figure out how these guys absorb the Jarvis Landry targets. How do you think it breaks down in Miami?
When you say seen guys that done it before, I know you don't include Albert Wilson in that.
I'm talking about Kenny Stills, we've seen and at the NFL level be productive. Danny Amendola, we've seen at the NFL level be productive. Albert Wilson is obviously less so in Kansas City. He was running as like a three in Kansas City in an offense that wasn't really, you know, able to support three wide receivers. I understand that, but I'll still take Albert Wilson right now over what I've seen out of Devontae Parker.
then I certainly wouldn't. There's a reason why he was the number three in Kansas City. They had terrible receiver depth before Tyreek Hill broke out. He had every opportunity to step forward, and he never did. Albert Wilson is not draftable. He's completely irrelevant for fantasy purposes. He scored 7 touchdowns in 3 years and never had more than 554 receiving yards. To me, Albert Wilson is completely irrelevant and out of the conversation.
Okay.
Kenny Stills is a guy who's very inconsistent as much as he's a big playmaker. I like him more as a best ball or a daily play. Yeah, Leonte Carew has never really done anything.
Out of Rutgers.
We have some brief flashes for Jakeem Grant. You know, maybe that's somebody, very, very deep that can step forward. Devontae Parker has been nothing but a disappointment and nothing but blather and hype. You know, this is a bad receiving crew with a mediocre quarterback, and Danny Amendola never stays healthy. Somebody will step forward here.
And that's the question, right, Scott?
Here's the thing. Somebody will – it's almost like, and like I say in fantasy baseball, for those of you who play, it's almost like who's going to be the closer and step forward. Somebody's got to seize the opportunity, but it's got to happen through an audition process. If Amendola is somehow able to stay healthy, he can be that guy. But the guy – takes too many big hits over the middle, and he always gets hurt. So if Amendola goes down, who knows? It could be anybody from Jakeem Grant to Leonte Carew, and we just don't know. I think it's more of a thing where we're watching the waiver wire early in the season because I don't trust any of these guys.
Okay, so definitely the Miami situation may be something to keep an eye on, because if you do accurately, Scott, as we always say, like, there's some level of you have to read the tea leaves a little bit, right, to try to get ahead of this. But it looks like the Miami wide receiver core is a place to really try to read the tea leaves, because if you can figure out who is going to step up, you may get some value. The one thing I will say, Scott, is, I mean, come on, Jarvis Landry last year, 4th in the NFL with 161 targets. There's definitely some opportunity for someone to take a step forward. There's a lot of targets there to go around. And, let's not forget, we also talked about, could this kid Mike Gesicki be the rare exception to start to maybe even get some opportunity in his rookie year? Scotty, I understand and agree with you the idea that Albert Wilson is not necessarily someone who moves the needle. But I'll tell you what, I'd like to be irrelevant and get $8 million a year, Scott.
Well, you know, that's looking at it from a different angle, of course.
Absolutely.
You know,
there's
backup quarterbacks, you know, a third stringers. Did you like to make that kind of money?
Yeah,
but they're not relevant in fantasy.
No, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. But the idea of pass catchers in Miami, what we know is that Jarvis Landry's not there. There's 10 targets a game up for grabs, right? And if we don't, you know, someone needs to go ahead and grab that brass ring. I'm going to tell you, though,
that there's 110 up for grabs, that the guys, you know, who are left are capable of, you know, equaling that amount.
What
and
do you
if
mean,
they
Scott?
Do, you say there's 110 receptions up for grabs. You know, Jarvis Landry earned those 110 receptions with his exceptional talent. There's no proof that anybody that's on the Dolphins roster can step up and, you know, take a high percentage of that. And then if you split that among 3 or 4 guys, you're talking mediocrity.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Scott, and I don't think there – but – on some level, they have to throw somewhere. Like, I'm not saying anyone's going to take, 100% of them, but I'm saying there's opportunity there. Like, the fact that Landry's right. not there represents opportunity for someone. I agree with you that, you know, it's not going to, like, all fall to Kenny Stills or anything like that. But, like, this does represent opportunity for someone. We talk about in fantasy football how it's really a mix of your skill and the opportunity that is there. For someone, it's going to be an opportunity to get a whole mess of targets. What they do with it, we don't know just yet, but there is the opportunity there, right? I mean, Scott, you agree with me on that. There is some opportunity for one of these guys to take a step forward.
There's opportunity, but the other part of it, as I always say it, is opportunity doesn't always lead to production necessarily. Now, look, right. there could be somebody that steps forward that we just don't expect. Like, it could be a Jakeem Grant. You know, that's a guy that, you know, maybe can step forward. We saw him make a few big plays last year. But I'm not confident that most of these guys, you know, have what it takes to step up and take advantage of the opportunity. For all we know, this offense could be terrible, and they could just be a bunch of three and outs. I saw one Miami beat writer who's been covering the team for years. He expects Kenyon Drake to lead the team in reception.
Weekdays, 7 a.m. Eastern on FNTSY Radio and on your popular podcast providers.